about that. Battery must be dead. Okay. Should I start over, or did you get that part already? Start over. Okay. About 6-7 years ago, I went on a rafting trip with my son and daughter-in-law. They were newly married almost a year, and Michelle was a travel nurse, so I went out to Albuquerque to visit them, and I'd never been to Albuquerque before. And we were looking for things to do, and because none of us had ever rafted on the Rio Grande, we thought this would be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And, you know, if we didn't do it now, we never would. So Michelle and Drew did their research and found a spot on the River Rio Grande where we could start, and there was a tour guide and all that kind of thing. And it was a level 1 and 2 rafting course. So we got there with all the other people. You had to take a bus and leave your valuables and all that kind of thing in a safe, secure place. And we got our instructions, one of which was to tighten our life vests as tight as we could possibly tighten them and then have someone else tighten them for us, because the river could sometimes get a little rough, and, you know, this was just part of the safety protocol. So we all dutifully did that, got in our rafts, and, you know, they showed us how to oar and how to organize everything. And so we did that, and we're kind of tooling down the Rio Grande very nicely, and we dumped. Okay, we dumped. And you're thinking, okay, haha, this is supposed to be part of the fun, and the water's a little cold, but you get used to it, and we'll have a story to tell. Okay, so we dumped, and we all got back to the boat. The guide told us how to hang on to the boat and then collectively flip it over so we could get in again, which we did. When we got in, what we found is that we had lost our oars. We had lost all the safety equipment. Those who had glasses or sunglasses on had them no more. So, okay, this is still a level 1 and 2 trip. This is not such a bad thing. You can tell where this is going, can't you? The river starts to pick up a little bit. Okay, well, we can manage this. And she's telling us how to lean so that we can steer the boat around the rapids. And sure enough, our boat dumps again. And we're all in the water. We all get back to the boat, except my daughter-in-law, Michelle, who, thank God, another boat picked her up, you know, on the way. And this time we're all on top of the upside-down raft. And the guide is starting to have a worried look on her face because the river is picking up. And she very seriously tells us to pay attention, that we have 10 seconds to flip this boat back the right way and get in. And if we don't do that, we're probably all going to die. It's amazing how quickly one can focus, especially. And what had happened is, because it was so warm that day, the snow in the mountains was melting a whole lot faster than anybody realized it would, and the river was picking up speed quite dangerously. And we were heading into one of the worst parts of the river, which they called a name that I'm not going to say here, but implied death. And anyway, as we approached it, what she said is, you need to hang on to this little line. And if we all lean the right way, we're going to be able to get through this. If not, hang on and just try to swim for shore any way that you possibly can, because there's no way to predict what's going to happen when you plunge into the water. So the boat ahead of us got through. They, of course, had their oars. They got through, okay? Our turn came, and we were looking at literally a 15-foot wall of white water and about a 15-foot vortex of white swirling water. And at that moment, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to die, and there's nothing I can do about it. So we did go in. The boat flipped. People went everywhere. Don't ask me how, but I managed to hang on to the thin line that was around the edge of the boat and found myself under the boat in a pocket of air. I knew I would have to plunge into the water again under this boat and find my way out. Okay? I collected myself, said a couple prayers, and did that, Lo and behold, there was a guy on the other end of the boat who had done the same thing. He was from Brookfield, of all places. So we introduced ourselves and got the boat to shore, and everybody was there. And a very long story short, we eventually got to where we were going. The river got simple after that. And some of us were foolish enough to say, God, that was a great rush. I want to do it again. Others, like my daughter-in-law, refer to it to the near-death experience. What does that have to do with the resurrection? What does that have to do with being a Christian in our time and place, with the gospel story we heard today? I think it has a lot to do with that. And as I was reflecting on not only the reading for today, but the Easter gospel from last Sunday, this story kept popping into my mind. And I kept thinking about the word Christian. Steve just talked about, we're hearing from Acts, because we're talking about the early church being formed. And what does it mean to be a Christian? And I thought, how much the word Christian is thrown about in our world today. Okay. How much it's thrown about and used and misused. So there is some, people don't know, you know, what is this what Christians mean? Is this what Christians mean? What exactly is a Christian? And I thought, well, the easy answer to that is it's a follower of Jesus. But I think the answer goes a lot farther than that. It'd be easy to say, I'm a Christian, I'm a follower of Jesus, and not worry about the walls, okay, sort of the rushing walls of a river and the vortex of chaos that our world is in, and just leave the answer as simple as that. I think the answer is found in how we make meaning of what it means to be a disciple of Jesus in this time and in this place. A disciple is a key word. Dallas Willard says, this was in an article that I read, it's almost universally conceded today that you can be a Christian without being a disciple. You can be a Christian without being a disciple. A disciple is an apprentice, somebody who learns from their teacher, their master, who tries to be like their teacher in every possible way, who is guided in everything that they do by their teacher, who takes correction, okay, who consistently studies the life of their teacher or their mentor, their guide. Okay. And I wonder if it would serve us better as a baptized people to think of ourselves as baptized apprentices of Christ. Because I think many of us who claim the label Christian, who claim the name Christian, expect that the Christian journey is going to be sort of that level 1 and 2 rafting trip. As long as we follow the basic directions, keep our life jackets tied on tightly, which probably means praying every day or as often as we can, coming to church on Sunday and doing good things, that we're going to be okay. Okay? God's got everything in control. Some of us are unwittingly or unwillingly thrown into a level 2, level 3, and 4 rafting course. Life may hand us a loss of a job, a major illness, the birth of triplets, getting married, all kinds of things that we are not prepared for or we are not ready, that throw us off course, that plunge us into the water. But we have enough people around us that'll help us get back on track. And we still sort of have this idea that God will make everything right in the end. But I really think that as Christians, we are actually called to a level 5 and 6 rafting course, which means letting go of everything that we know, everything that we think we know about Jesus, about what God has in mind for the world, about how we will get through the raging waters of our time. I believe our call is to let go of our oars and our safety nets and plunge willingly and head first, with however much afraid we might be, into the raging waters of our times. And really look at, really study, really follow, what is Jesus calling us to do? What is God calling us to do in these chaotic times? Because I believe if we really knew that and really lived that, our world would be a different place. And so we, like the disciples, and like Mary, who had to figure out what being a disciple after Jesus' resurrection meant in their time and place as the church was being formed, so we have to figure out, what does being a disciple of Christ mean in our time and place? And how do we do that? The interesting thing to me is that despite any failings that Mary, that the disciples had before Jesus died, they betrayed him, they didn't understand the stories, they ran away. After the resurrection, Jesus still said, I want you to do this. I want you to take this plunge with me from death into life. And trust me. Trust that I will be with you. Trust that God's purpose is working in all of this. God still does the same with us. The resurrection called them to a point of decision making and clarity about where they wanted to go in life and who they wanted to follow. I believe the resurrection calls us to that same question of decision, that same question of clarity. Who do we want to follow? How much do we want to follow Jesus? And what are we going to do about that? What are we willing to let go of so we can take the plunge, really take the plunge into what a baptized apprentice life means? I wonder, for the next baptism, Steve, we shouldn't just, you know, sort of pour water delicately. Because I wonder sometimes if we're giving a false impression of what the Christian life should look like. It's not a delicate journey, but it should be plunging and messing up the waters, and the raging waters might be a symbol. This is about transformation. God's call is about transformation of ourselves as individuals, ourselves as a church, this body of people in the world as human beings, into whatever it is that God is calling us to be. So I invite you to just let go, take the plunge. Amen.